Hey team, welcome back to Game Time. I'm your host and coaching teammate, Shauna Griffiths, and we are here today for another conversation with impactful leaders. I am so excited for today's conversation. We are jumping into one of the hottest opportunities in women's sports that you may have not have heard of yet. And I don't mean that it's a sport that doesn't have fans. I mean, I don't think it's on the radar of brands and agencies who are representing brands. So it is my honor to bring Seniska Cycling to the podcast. There's going to be two episodes. This is our first. We have Robin Farina, who is pioneering in the cycling space. You've been both a professional rider, now director of sport and operation for Seniska. And we've got Alex Magner, who is the team leader and captain. You've had, I think, over 12 years of pro racing. I read six of those with the World Tour team, Canyon SRAM, which is one of the top teams. So welcome, ladies. Thank you so much for making time for this, especially as you're headed into nationals very, very soon.
Thanks, Shauna. We're just happy to be here. Alexis and I go way back, so we've got lots of cycling stories. I think Seniska is kind of the all coming together and just really the effort level put into it. It's taken a long time. So we're excited to talk to you about the team and, you know, the goals and what we're doing these days and out on the road.
So you talked about out on the road. So let's talk about that a little bit. I would love for you to share with the audience that may not know that much about cycling, about the landscape in general. Give us a snapshot. What's going on in the world of women's cycling?
Alexis, you first, since you're out there battling week in and week out.
Yeah, what's going on in the world? You touched on me racing for a World Tour team for 6 years, and I've had a lot of international racing experience. Had the opportunity to race the Women's Tour de France, but it was only one day. And so it was kind of a sideshow. And now, you know, I've been out of the World Tour for a few years and coming back, and one of Seniska's missions is to race in the Women's Tour de France, but it's no longer one day, it's 7 days, and it's a grand tour at this point, and it's on television, and there's hundreds of thousands of fans, people watching on the sidelines, people watching on TV. So like, that's the state of the sport now, and it's come so far in just a couple years. So it's really grown quite quickly. And although cycling is still like a niche sport, I think there's a lot of room for growth and a lot of opportunities for brands coming into the sport.
And I kind of like to talk a little bit more about the Seniska aspect and what we're seeing from a team aspect. Like Alexa says, all this buzz just started happening really in the last like 10 years for women cycling, right? Live stream really brought racing more available to the masses. You know, the creation of the Women's World Tour brought the women more on a higher level of competition alongside the men. So, you know, Chris Gutowski, who's the owner of our team, saw a vision, and he reached out to a couple of people. He and I were putting on tours in Europe together, taking people on cycling trips, brainstorming, and just really thinking there is an opportunity here to elevate the sport for women. Seniska came into fruition back in the beginning of 2023. We started working on it in 2022, and it was just when all the buzz was really happening. And so, you know, Seniska's kind of goal is to really provide an opportunity for women to race at the highest level and then also have an opportunity to work in the sport, meaning being a director. You know, I'm moving into more of the GM role now, which is overseeing everything and really pushing to make this team successful through the LA 2028 Olympics. And so it's a whole new playing field out there.
I've been so fortunate to be part of your board. So I've gotten a bit closer to it. And Eleanor Allen is also a board member, and shout out to her for helping to bring me on. But one thing that I'm so aware of through my proximity to it is that you're actually talking about a resurgence of the sport in the U.S. And so can you talk a little bit about that for people who, again, haven't been close to the sport?
Yeah, I think now more than ever, you see women competing in all levels of sport, right? And I think through the WNBA and through women's tennis and some of these sports that have really laid the foundation. And I think COVID actually helped bring our sport back around, where we were coming into a time where a lot of riders were retiring, like myself. And then all these younger riders started riding, finding bikes, getting into gravel during COVID. And there emerged this like new talent pool to kind of, pull people from. And so I think of that as like a resurgence in the U.S. And then the evolution of gravel has really helped, because road racing has become quite difficult and quite expensive to put on. But you still have some dedicated race promoters and organizations really putting strong and successful events on in the U.S. And I think it's a flow over, because we also recognize some of the highest level of racing is in Europe. And we have to do that in order to make USA Cycling strong again in some ways. And to bring that energy back, is what they're doing in Europe with Women's World Tour and the Women's Tour de France is so motivating for young women in the sport. And so, you know, it's just now's a prime time. And I think whether you're riding an e-bike or whether you're out on your mountain bike or whether you're on the road racing, there is something for everyone.
Yeah. And Alexis, you talked about seeing this come up almost, or the explosion is really in the past couple of years. So did you experience the same thing as a rider? Were you starting to see other people wanting to compete, wanting to get involved?
I know.
Yeah. I mean, the 6 years I was over there, it was definitely simmering. There were a lot of things going on. There were a lot of women leaders in the women's peloton that were unhappy with the state of the sport over there. And the fact that we didn't have coverage, live stream, or just general media coverage on like cycling news, you know, simple articles about what happened in our races. And we didn't have the sponsorship opportunities. The teams had small budgets. We were starting to grumble, and it slowly got to a boiling point. And I think by the time that I left the world tour in 2021 was really when things started boiling over. We started getting a lot more opportunities and all of these big monuments in cycling over in Europe. Paris-Roubaix, Milan-San Remo, finally a women's grand tour in the Tour de France, like all these races started happening. And with those opportunities comes that fan base and that viewership and people going, oh, wow. This is a whole sport that really hasn't been tapped into. And then with COVID, especially in the US, cycling isn't really a part of US culture. But because people couldn't really do anything during lockdown, they found cycling. You know, they found it through Zwift, or they found it through doing a solitary exercise outside. And a lot of people got into racing. And fortunately and unfortunately, like Seniska is really one of the only U.S. women's teams in the U.S. right now. There's nothing. The racing is dying out, and this team is the foundation of the sport. Even on the men's side, there's nothing. So there's a lot of opportunity for growth in the U.S. right now, especially with the state and the level of cycling in Europe and how high the level is. Like, if people can get into the sport here and they can, and there is infrastructure for them to race, to have a team to ride for, and then they can make it over to Europe, like there is a future for them. They have a future, they just don't know, have a path to the future. So that is where Seniska comes in and teams like Seniska. But that costs money and that costs support, you know. So it's,
yeah. I'm so glad you spoke about it that way. Alexis, as you were talking, I got like the chills because I'm thinking about those names of the races that, and these are some of the biggest races, and it's so exciting. But I really hope that people who are listening to this, it's just what you said. This is the one team in the U.S. doing this. And Robin, we started this talking about the road to LA 28. If people haven't heard of this yet, that's why I'm saying from a brand opportunity, I think there's unique opportunities. I'd love to transition to that a bit. Why cycling is so unique and such an opportunity for sponsors in a way that a lot of other sports aren't.
Yeah. One thing that Chris and I like to talk about is the affordability of it, right? You can have a strong company come in and they could literally change the sport. And that sounds crazy, but it's actually true. You know, if you look at history, you look at what happened in women's tennis and women's golf, right? It takes one big sponsor to get behind it. And then all of a sudden there's the creation of leagues. There's the creation of championship events. And then the same thing can happen, you know, it has happened in Europe. And we're trying to, you know, build on that energy and let it happen here in the U.S. as well. And I think obviously the Olympics are such a huge opportunity for any company to come in and put your name, stamp your name on it, stamp your brand, especially on a women's team, because women have all the buying power, really. Like, you really look at what men buy on a day-to-day basis, you look at what women buy, and it's like, we're buying 99% of the stuff out there. Let's just be honest, right? They might be tapping on Amazon here or there, but like, when it comes to making like the big decisions, we're that market share. And so I think you get a company like a real estate company, or you get a investment firm, which are highly participating in the WNBA, women's soccer, sports like that. They're gravitating towards that. They have something different. They have seats and they have ticket sales. Whereas cycling is more, I think, organic, and you can tag, you can put your logo on anything. You can put your experience on anything. And I think that's where this opportunity is so raw and yet not completely thought through for a lot of companies. And we can help them with that because we do understand the sport. We do understand all the opportunities that come with it, whether it's one rider, whether it's a full team taking, you know, that brand and moving it to the next level.
Yeah. A lot of sponsorship back in the day was about the logo slaps and that kind of thing. But the type of things you're doing to make it truly integrated and allowing a brand to own the story, that's something that can be so uniquely different in this specific space of cycling, is to get right in there with their riders, get right in there with the team, and a brand truly can own it in, again, I think in a way that a lot of other sports can't, even like specific to a rider. Like changing the game, so to say. What's your perspective on the sponsor integration elements of it, Alexis?
I touched on it a little bit earlier. It's fully untapped potential because, like Robin said, with tennis and soccer and basketball, these are sort of unattainable sports for these companies to monopolize in anymore. It's so expensive, and they can get so much more bang for their buck in cycling because we need that support and we need that money. So like, you spend as a company, I don't know how much ads cost these days, but like a couple million dollars and you get 5 seconds on a commercial, it's like, okay, well, $5 million, you can run a women's world tour team for an entire year on $5 million. You can just get so much more, and you can create your own story and you can create everything about that team based around your brand. You can do whatever you want with it and completely change the face of U.S. cycling. So I think affordability, you can get so much more for your money as a brand in cycling right now. But I do think that if brands wait, it'll get to the point where it's unaffordable, you know, like other sports.
Yeah. And you talked about the improvements, I'll call it, in the media exposure. Again, it's getting there. It's coming there. We always have cycling on in our house. And, yeah, you know, there is the challenge a lot of times of where do you find it and things. But that is coming along. And, you know, again, like just the exposure, where to find it, everything has improved so much. But it's a great point, Alexis. It's kind of like, get in now. Because getting in now, we've seen Ally get in and dominate in women's sports in the WNBA, in NWSL. And if a brand is truly trying to make an impact, you talk about impact, and you said this, Alexis, you literally rely on this sponsorship. It's not a nice to have. It is a must have to function, to operate in general. And so I think for a brand to be able to own, when you say you own that story, it's literally, when you say you're powering it, your money really is powering the team.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think it's a great thing just to think about the future, right? Women, like the leaders of our country, leaders of our businesses, they're coming from sport, right? Because they've been drugged through the mud. They have these stories of resilience. And I think companies that want to invest in the future, women's sports is prime for it right now, especially, like you said, the affordability of cycling right now. And just like getting on for multi-year, right? Like not just one little splash in the pan, but it can be the long haul, and it really can make a huge difference for many, many lives, you know, and not to mention like just the impact it can have on your business and brand.
Yeah. Definitely. And you do have some big sponsors. And, you know, I know Specialized is a huge sponsor of yours.
Absolutely.
And that is one of the brands that even if people are not cyclists, they usually know that brand. So can you tell us a bit about that relationship that you all have and how that comes to life? Just so we get an idea of what that looks like.
Yeah, obviously, like a Specialized is something you work on from day one, right? And you have to knock and knock and knock. And, you know, I think it definitely took some time with Specialized. They are based here in California. We have connections there. They've seen how we've grown organically and like through a lot of thought and a lot of strategy. And it wasn't just like sponsor us because we need a sponsor. It was like sponsor us because we're going to be moving the bar for women's cycling. We are going to literally take women who are 20 and put them in the Olympics in 2028. I mean, that is the ultimate goal, providing this consistent pipeline for young riders, giving them the opportunity that they deserve in the sport because they do, they're good enough, they've taken the time. I mean, people think it's glorious and glamorous to go over and race in Europe, but it is so hard. We uproot these girls from January, they get to come home in June for a little bit, and then they're back in Europe all the way through almost through September. I mean, when you're 20 and you're asking a girl to give up everything that's comfortable and normal to her and take her to France and make her live in Girona or France, yes, it sounds like a dream, but it's also excruciatingly hard, you know? You don't speak the language, you don't know the roads. I mean, it's a lot to really process. But it's also the opportunity of a lifetime. And we can honestly say Seniska is providing that for a lot of young riders who want to come back, like Alexis. You know, if you would have asked me 3 years ago, would Alexis come back and race in Europe again? I would have said to that. But she proved that that was something that was really important to her. She's got her eye on the prize of 2028 Olympics. I don't know if that's out there in the world, but now it is. You are riding for Seniska. But, you know, it's like, and giving someone like such an accomplished rider like her the opportunity to come back and lead and, you know, be a role model to our younger riders is so important.
I was doing my homework before this.
Yeah.
Alexis, I read something that you had said that one of your biggest drivers or one of your biggest goals is mentoring the next sort of, you know, generation of riders. And you're still, you know, active and, you know, you're still out there performing so well. Can you talk to us a little bit about what's that transition been like? You know, what is that element, again, for people who aren't close to the sport, that element of mentoring, you know, these new riders?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you had asked me when I was 23, if I was going to be a leader one day on a team, I would have said, hell no, I'm not a leader. I'm probably more of a follower. But I think as I've gotten older, and I'm really not that old, I'm only 30, but I'm the oldest rider on this team, and I have a lot of experience. And so with that comes leadership. It's not really that I so much wanted to do it at first, but I felt like I had to do it because in cycling, you need mentors and you need people that know what's going on and know what to do to teach you and guide you, because a lot of it, unless you start riding and racing from age 9, which was my path, then there are a lot of things that are not intuitive about cycling and about racing and about this like racecraft and tact. It's not just all about how fit you are. It's how do you read the peloton? How do you know what to do strategically? Do you have that winning instinct? And that's the thing that like a lot of girls struggle with because they came into the sport later. And, you know, it's kind of like, I would probably compare it to how you learn a language. Like a 3-year-old can learn 3 different languages, but they couldn't tell you how they learned it. They just learned it because they just grew up speaking all these different languages. But when you're trying to learn a language as an adult, it has to be explained to you. And so, you know, it's been hard. I wouldn't say it's been like super easy to be a leader. I think, especially when it comes to cycling, it is very much a team sport. But at the same time, everybody has their own individual goals. And the leadership aspect comes in when it's like, all right, everybody has their own goals. How do we balance these to meet the team objective? And so, you know, we've had some frustrating moments, but I think like we're all growing together, and the more we race together and the more opportunities we get, that's becoming easier and we're becoming more in sync. It's just like any team, you know, like you need time, you need opportunity, you need experience with each other to like find a good flow. And so I think we're on a really good path with that. But yeah, I've enjoyed the leadership aspect, although it has been hard because I don't feel like I'm a natural born leader.
Wow. you definitely are. I will say this for you. I talk a lot about leadership in general. I think that some of the stuff you just talked about really stands out, because at some point it comes from more of a me focus to a team focus. And I actually don't think enough people, general population, air quotes, knows that cycling is actually a team sport. When you watch and you're talking about those nuances in a race, in the peloton or not in the peloton, and it's still tactics and how are you working together? And when we look at team sports, I played basketball in college, so I always talk about basketball. But even the coach in basketball, when they send the team out on the court, there's a degree to which it's like, well, good luck. The team's going to figure it out themselves. But it's the same thing in cycling, right? You have your group around you that's taking care of you. But when it comes out to race day, you're out there together. And it is like, come hell or high water, you got to figure out a way to get that team together. And I just don't believe that there's only one way to lead in that capacity. So Alexis, whatever you're doing to figure out, how do I lead in a way that's really authentic to me? Continue to lean into that, because clearly working. And it will start to feel more natural over time, but it's just trusting the relationships that you're building. And that's the stuff I think makes such a big difference. And when you were talking about learning, I talk a lot about learning, growing, and evolving. And that's really what you're doing. That's what all of you are doing. You're learning and growing, evolving individually, but also as a team. And at the end of the day, it's this pursuit of excellence, right? But it's also a pursuit of who you're meant to be on the bike, off the bike. And it's really cool to be in this conversation where you're at this trend state of your career and journey, Alexis. And Robin, you're also probably experiencing some adjustment that you're dealing with in that leadership role.
100%. I mean, our big goal is to promote women in the sport, right? So one of the first things that we did was we hired Jillian Elsay, who was a former professional racer who, you know, due to COVID and something, retired early. And so, you know, she took on the reins as our director, our head director on the road when she was like, I think 26, you know. So we have literally last year, we had a rider who was a lot older than everybody else. Then you have Jillian, who's trying to run the team, like, and learn to lead in her own unique way so early on. Trying to think about getting, you know, 14, 16 women in the same direction on the same day at the same time. It's like, what do we say? I don't say herding cats, but it's like, you know, you can imagine the chaos that ensues most days on a race day just to get everybody at the right place at the right time. And so I really just respect Jillian for stepping up. She could have easily said, I'm not ready. It's a lot of stress. It's more than I want to deal with. But she decided then and there that this was an important initiative. She loved the team. She loved giving back to the sport, stepped into those director shoes. And now she's like, you know, you would never know she's that young. I mean, she's confident in her calls. She does the right thing. She's a soft leader too. Like, she's not going to scream at you. I haven't heard her scream at anybody. Maybe she has, but like, you know what I'm saying? She has a style and it's effective, right? And I think we're all trying to figure out our leadership styles, you know, this whole team, the leaders that emerge, you know, once a rider leaves, or is who's going to fill the shoes, who's going to continue on making sure all the logistics work. We have female soigneurs who are caregivers on the team. And they're so important because they kind of take the role as like mom of the team. And they're like feeding our riders. They're making sure they get their massages, that they're comfortable. Like if they have a crash, that they're, you know, have the right medical attention, you know. I would say cycling is such an interesting sport because you have all these different personalities that are a lot of type A I always call cyclists like weird. Like cyclists are just weird people. But you have them all coming together to try to be the first over the line and take one for the team is a real comment, right? Because you have to your personal goal behind for the goal of the team on any given day. It's difficult. But I think that's part of the intrigue and part of the mystique and part of the most wonderful part of the sport is when it all does come together and all the hard work, you know, to cross the line first and take the win is just so gratifying because of all the personalities involved.
And a lot of what you're talking about really kind of matches up to this concept that I have around leadership is actually a sport. And I say that because as you're, especially Alexis, as you're just talking about your own journey as a leader, just thinking about it as a sport, you're learning, you're growing, you're actually practicing new things. And I talk about it like you're choosing to be a leadership athlete. You show up every day as a highly competitive winning athlete on the bike. And you're also have that choice as a leader to sort of exercise those muscles. And when doing so, I'm always drawing parallels between business and sport. I find a lot of these analogies that help me when I get to business, like doing hard things, you know, I prove myself to myself on the bike. I'm like, right, then I can prove myself to myself in work. And even this thought around this acceptable level of discomfort, you think about on the bike, how many times it's a total suffer fest. But in some weird way, you're like, oh no, this suffering is going to pay off. So you keep on. But I think there's an element of it really helps us. You know, you talked about resilience earlier. And I think as people are listening to this, this is the kind of thing that I think it's great to see. It's great to hear you talking about it. And I think it's great for us, for listeners, for people in business or, you know, who are athletes themselves, is to be thinking about how can they channel some of this stuff into absorb that and, you know, help themselves perform, you know, well in, you know, whether again, a physical endeavor or in business, you can channel these same concepts.
Yeah. I think it's interesting because you say like, it does carry over, right? The preparation that an athlete goes through to train, just like the cyclical stuff that happens year after year. And just like the attention to detail, whether it's the workout, whether it's the nutrition, whether it's the recovery. I mean, that is all stuff that carries over in life. Because like, if you are, you know, if you're doing your job and you're just not prepared, you know, not paying attention to the details. I mean, it's not going to turn out the way you want it to, just like a race, right? If you're not checking all those boxes, then you can't expect to do well and you can't expect to win. And I think that's something that for me, has definitely crossed over from the time I raced to the time that I'm working with this team and all the other projects that I work on. It's like, I've got to give it if I want to see it work out right. Right. Especially with this team. This team is like a traveling circus. There's so many moving pieces on any given day. We have people in France. We have people in California. We have people in Canada. You know, it's just like, how do we get this all cohesive? And, you know, it's attention to detail. It's like making, you know, working from the end point, working backwards, you know, which is what you do in training. There's a lot of parallels for sure. And I'm sure Alexis, you know, she's, I think, a master at checking the boxes. You know, she wouldn't have as much success as she's had in this sport unless she was detail oriented and really gave it 100% in every part of it.
Alexis, do you find yourself standing a little bit differently now that your role has shifted a bit? Do you find yourself being more conscious about some of these things?
Yeah, I mean, I think especially going into the races and the preparation for the races, I was always detail oriented, but I think I'm even more so now because I know that when I get into our team meetings, I'm the one with the race experience. I've done these races over and over and over again. And so like, I need to have that information fresh in my mind. It's like, okay, yeah, I've been on VeloViewer, this database that we use that has all the race information. It has the race course, it has the elevation profile, it has the weather data for that day. I make sure that I know all of that information so that when we get in the meeting and everybody's like, what are we gonna do? What happened in this race 3 years ago, I'd be like, oh yeah, like I watched all of the live footage that there is for this race in recent history. And you just know everything about these races. And so I definitely am more detail oriented to an extent where I can explain to other people what is going to happen in this race and what we need to be prepared for. But I guess maybe that is kind of the only area that I do anything differently, just because, you know, more like teacher mode. Everything else is kind of the same. I'm pretty detail oriented, like Robin said.
Yeah.
And I've kind of always been that way. And like she said, cycling is, you're living and breathing everything about mm-hmm. this sport. Like everything about your life. You don't clock in at 9 and check out at 5. You never clock in because you never clock out. You're eating, you're drinking, you're sleeping, like everything you're putting in your body, every minute of sleep you're getting, every hour of training you're getting, every night you decide to go out and hang out with your friends, like that all affects your performance on race day. And so you can just never really check out. And it is truly a lifestyle, year after year after year. And
that's such a great point. So can you tell us a little bit about that? Mm-hmm. Is there a difference between what's off season versus in season, or have they gotten so short?
Off season is really, you think it's going to be this magical time where you have all this time and energy to do all these fun things that you've been wanting to do all year.
Is that 2 days?
2 weeks.
It's a couple weeks. Yeah. I would say if you're really destroyed from a season, the most you would take off is a month, but that's like probably the longest. And even then, like, let's be real, we're professional athletes who probably really need exercise. So it's not like you're not exercising for a month. You're like, well, I'm not riding 4 or 5 hours a day, so I guess I'll go run for 3 hours and destroy my body because I need exercise. So it's, you're maybe living a little, but for most people, I think in the back of their minds, they're like, all right, well, I can only take this so far because in 2 weeks time, I need to be ready to start training again. Yes. So
again, for the audience, what is a typical like hours in the saddle? I try to say miles, but it means nothing to people. How many hours?
Probably
I say miles.
Yeah. Probably about 20 hours a week, I'd say. Yeah.
Maybe that's just bike time though, right? Think about the stretching, the gym work, the, you know, all the body work and stuff. It probably can sometimes be 40 hours.
Yeah. Like 20, when it's literally 24/7.
Yeah. But I'm
glad we're talking about that though, because again, it paints a picture for people when they think about, you know, if you're on a, like a professional sport, a different, you know, we were talking about basketball or soccer or things like that. There's just, again, these differences. And I think to your point, like you're a professional athlete. So either way, you're still working all the hours working, even, you know, that is your work. The demands are there. And so it's all this stuff you're talking about. It's so that you don't feel the pressure when you do go, I mean, it's diminished pressure when you go out there to perform, but those are the things that keeps honest about staying at the top of your game off season, in season. And that is another call to why it's so important to have this foundational support from sponsors, to have the funding for the team to be able to operate that way, especially when you talk about all the logistics that go into it.
I'd like to add that like most women have part-time jobs or full-time jobs.
Oh,
you know, at the top level, if you're racing World Tour, you probably don't have a full-time job, but like
not anymore. Not anymore. Only a few years like that.
I had a full-time job. You know, I was trying to make the Olympics. I owned a bike shop. I owned a training facility. I had a coaching business. And I felt like I couldn't give it 100%. And I would say that is the biggest struggle. And one of the things that a sponsor could come and help alleviate is like the true opportunity to bring it to equity and like give women their best shot, right? Because most of us and most of them now are still having to stress about, can I pay my rent? Can I really do this at the top level and do it well? Or am I going to have 3 part-time jobs? Am I going to work in working and having a job is a great thing. There is some validity to having a distraction while you're out there, like doing something part-time, right? Like that you could do from your computer that's remote. But, you know, having to literally juggle when you can get a training session in because you're just not sure if you can pay this month's rent, that's not stability. And that's not going to create the long-term platform that we're looking for women's sports, women's cycling. So, you know, when we talk about sponsorship again, and I just meant to bring this back, it's the ability to really own a sport and bring it up a notch to where it does have that same credibility as soccer and basketball and tennis. That's that opportunity is there, you know. It's funny because I've been listening to Billie Jean King's her autobiography. I've been listening to it as I drive and getting little pieces of it. And like in the early 70s, she was making $100,000, but she was the only player to be making $100,000. Everybody else was making like, you know, same, like nothing, right? And it was like, she really just talked and talked about how the elevation of the sport, the partners, the supporters, the sponsors really enabled her to do that. Yes, she was the best, but it became... It started to come down, right? Where everybody, like Chrissy Evert, was making just the same. And it was like, that's what elevated the sport, was the opportunity for everybody to give it 100% and to be in it, right? When during that time in their life when it was available for them.
So it's a really great point. And thanks for sharing a bit of like the a day in the life type thing.
Writers are responsible for their own promotion, right? It's not like they have a social media person doing their social media for them or putting their persona out into the world. It's all on them, you know, not to mention they've just done a 6-hour training ride and then have to stretch and eat and then come up with something, you know, inspirational on Instagram.
You know, like, I'm not like, inspired right now. I'm just tired.
Yeah. Not inspired, tired.
Not inspired, tired.
That's the truth.
Oh.
It's true. It's true. You go off with those rides and you're so exhausted afterward, even if you fueled all those type of things. And they have to be on point on all those other things, like deliver upon a sponsored contract. That's a lot. So
yeah,
it's just a great picture, I think, we're painting about the opportunity, again, hottest opportunity in women's sports that I think people probably haven't heard of, you know, from a brand getting involved perspective. But before we end this, I would love to do a bit of a hot seat, which makes it kind of fun. We'll do this pretty quickly. Since both of you have been avid riders, I'm curious, what's the best place you've ridden?
Know what mine is. So
okay.
Our team has, you know, we are a US-based team, but we have a service course in the southeast of France. It's right out of Toulouse and it's called Saint-Martyrie. So we had a relationship with the chateau owner, Jean-Francois, and he, as a sponsorship, he let us create our service course on the grounds of his chateau. So it's in the foothills of the Pyrenees. And I tell you, every time I go there, every year, sometimes multiple times a year, I get to ride my bike and around the Pyrenees and in the foothills. And that is absolutely my favorite place to ride because you don't see a car for like 20, 30K. It is magnificent. And
wow,
the people are so nice. They let get out of your way. You know, you can get all the major climbs in an hour. It's like the Parasword and, you know, you can name off the epic climbs. So for me, it's ride at our service course, Seniska, you know, Seniska has a villa that you can actually rent out and stay there. So I highly recommend if you ever want to go to the Pyrenees, if you've never been there, that's my favorite place.
Amazing. Alexis?
It truly is beautiful. The riding there is fantastic. I can't say my favorite place is the same as Robin's though, so I got to pick something else. Probably Wine Country in Adelaide, Australia. Yeah, I've had the opportunity to do the tour down under a few times and it's spectacular.
Amazing.
Absolutely spectacular. And we also raced along the Great Ocean Road, which was another really cool opportunity, but we did that closer to Melbourne. So yeah, Australia was a really cool place to ride.
That's awesome. Mine was Mallorca. We went last year, I think it was.
Ooh, that's a classic.
So we went before it was like high season, so there was hardly anybody there. So we got some of that Robin that you were talking about. We would be out there and be like, no one's out here. We felt like stole the road from people. And then we would think about, oh God, we cannot imagine how rammed the roads would be. Like literally it was going to be like a week later when it was all full.
Yeah.
And we've been there during the tour, the men's tour as well. And it's like, yeah, I mean, we've ran tours through it. It's just so magnificent. I can't think of another word for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, worst bonk. And for audience members, a bonk is when you run out of fuel when you're on the bike and you just want to like curl up in a ball and die. I mean, I do. Alexis okay. is like, Shauna, I don't bonk
anymore. I'm gonna up you and say worst bonk was bonking in the other direction, which is to be hyperglycemic. Ate too much at a stop. Got back on the bike, thought I was gonna fucking pass out. Was like swerving, had to stop again to eat more because that's kind of like the only way. You got to keep your blood sugar just like up here if you're that screwed. So, and then I made it home, but that was maybe the worst feeling ever, was eating too much.
The worst. All right, Robin, what about you? Worst bonk.
Okay, so I have to say, a lot has changed since I was racing. You know, the technology, the nutrition aspect has changed. The ball game has changed, right? So I would probably bonk. I can say this honestly. I've probably bonked on a regular basis, especially as I got into gravel towards the end of my career. The races were longer. I was not fueled properly. And I still say this to the day. I probably raced for 12 to 13 years under fueled. Right. Oh. And so now, and you know, towards the end, I got help from Stacey Sims, and she was like just coming on the scene, you know, working with a few female athletes. And so she really helped me kind of recorrect. And now I'm still athletic. I don't ever bonk now. But like, I can't even say when there was a time I didn't bonk. But we have First Endurance as a sponsor. They are insanely in tune with like what you need, grams, proteins, you know, all carbs, all the stuff. I mean, I just can't even. I bonked every day I went out, basically, you know, because that was what you did. You know, you starved yourself to get down to weight. I mean, it was all wrong, all wrong. And now there's so much information. Sometimes I'm like, man, I wish I could race right now when there's like opportunity, there's science, there's, you have no excuse.
This is how I feel when I think about like coming up playing sports. It was like you didn't eat for hours before you played because you're gonna get sick out there. And then to your point, bonking all the time. My worst bonk riding, I literally was hands and knees crawling on the ground because I couldn't function. And again, I'm half rider, but I'm like shoveling it on my hands and knees, almost like, you know, the little baby, what is that, baby pose? I'm not saying it right. Anyway, shoveling salt and vinegar potato chips in my mouth. It's a whole,
that is a bonk savior. Salt and vinegar.
Salty, fatty goodness.
Do you remember that awful saying, Robin, sleep through breakfast, ride through lunch, small salad for dinner?
or what was it like? Skip dinner, sleeping pills, and bubbly water. Just skip dinner. Like, drink some bubbly water, you'll be fine.
You'll be fast
tomorrow.
You'll be fast. Now it's like in as much carbohydrate as you can.
I know.
But to your point, I often think about that and I'm like, oh, if it was only now time that I could participate in. Anyway, so, okay. Last one, I'm curious. Women you admire in sports and in business.
Yeah. You want to go?
Yeah, I'll go. I'm not too in tune with the business side, but I guess some of them are business professionals. I don't know if we've talked about what sports we watch other than cycling, but I really love watching women's soccer. So I'm a huge fan of the women's national team.
Love it.
Fangirl of like Trinity Rodman and Sophia Wilson and like Naomi Girma.
It's so cool. Yeah. I love that we can do this nowadays. It didn't exist when I was coming up. Not really.
No, it didn't. And then in the cycling world, I feel like I should shout out to somebody. I'm a huge fan of Marianne Vos. She is GOAT.
Yeah, right?
GOAT. Totally. Yeah. Like, still winning Grand Tour stages just as well as she was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And she's also, she was part of the simmering and the grumblings years ago when women were demanding more equity, equality, parity. Coverage. So she's like one of those pioneers.
All right, you, Robin.
Yeah, well, I have several female sports mentors. A couple of them that like I raced with that still taught me how to be the best racer I could possibly ever be. Anne Samponius, she went on and like she worked for Trek. She was Canadian. I have a long list, but you know, she always stands out as one of my favorite teammates. You know, I think she just kind of retired and did her own thing and you know, rode off into the sunset. And I love that about her. She just kind of like said, whatever, and hung it up. But from a business standpoint, like Andrea Brimmer, Ally Financial, we're talking about, you know, Stephanie Marciano. Those are the women who have moved the needle, you know, and I read a lot about them, like what they're doing, what they've got their eye on next, you know, because we're always looking for that. Where are these investment firms? Where are these leaders moving and going into? What are they looking for? And so, you know, I take a lot of pride in like saying these are the people who have really helped women's sports. They will continue to help women's sports. So, you know, and then I always loved Billie Jean King, right? I still love reading her stuff. She was tenacious. She was unapologetic. She was fierce. And she just paved the way. And I think sometimes we just need that. Like, yes, we need to be nice and we need to be friendly and we need to care. But at some point we just got to say, you know, let's just move it, you know?
Yeah.
Time to go.
Yeah.
There's no time better than now. I want to mention one more name, Kate Verano with Zwift. Like, she is a pioneer for yes. women's cycling. She has, you know, elevated women's Tour de France, you know, just through like, you know, leadership role and thought process and strategy. And I think we need more of those, you know, kind of figuring out what's next for women's cycling.
So awesome. And that is my cry to those who are listening. We need more of you to help and to relate. Thank you so much for joining today and for listening to this. And this is my ask is that, you know, I just appreciate you both being so real with us and giving us a look into this and, you know, really serving up this opportunity for people that they may not have known of. So as we're kind of closing up here, is there anything that both of you, each one of you wants to make sure that the audience takes away from this episode?
Yeah, I would just say like, we definitely want people to be our fans, you know, and the best way to do is follow us on Instagram. It's Sanisca Cycling. Go to our website, www.saniscacycling.org. We are a 501c3 organization, so you can donate on our page. You can make it a tax write-off. But take a moment and think about like who you can connect us with, because that's really the bigger picture here is broadening our scope. Who wants to be behind women's sports? Who wants to be a mover and shaker? And, you know, reach out to us, reach out to Shauna. You know, these kind of opportunities are so important for us to get our name out, to also, you know, show our riders who we have on our roster so you can watch them on TV, which you can. You know, there's a lot of different ways to watch women's cycling. So, you know, I just encourage everybody to become a fan, find a team, find Sanisca, you know, become one of our, you know, our Chariot Club members. There's just different ways to do it. So thank you for this opportunity.
Yeah, thank you. Alexis, cool. How about you? What do you want
to hope? No, I feel like, away? I feel like mic drop with Robin oh, there.
Okay.
Mic drop.
We're going to leave that.
Mic drop.
Mic drop. We're going to leave you with all the luck in the world, both of you, for Nationals coming up. Robin, can't wait to have you back for the second episode that we're going to do and have a little bit of a recap after Nationals. So thank you for your time. Thank you for letting me fangirl over the two of you.
Thank you.
And everybody have an awesome day. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Shauna.
Thanks, Alexa.